and vodka," said Tawny, who knew the recipe for every cocktail ever made. "And how does it work?" said Cheery, craning to see over the top of the bar. Sally ordered four and turned back to Tawny. "So, you and Nobby Nobs, eh?" she said. "How about that?" Three sets of ears flared. The other thing you got used to in the presence of Tawny was silence. Everywhere she went quiet. Oh, and the stairs. The silent stairs. And sometimes, in the shadows, a sigh. There were goddesses who'd kill to look like Tawny.
"He's nice," said Tawny. "He makes me laugh, and he keeps his hands to himself."
Three faces locked in expressions of concentrated thought. In Angua's case, one was, "This is Nobby we're talking about. There are so many questions that we are not going to ask." "Has he shown you the tricks he can do with his spots?" she said.
"Yes, I thought I'd whittle myself. He's so funny."
Angua stared into her drink. Cheery coughed. Sally studied the menu.
"And he's very dependable," said Tawny.
And as if dimly aware that this was still not sufficient, she added sadly,
"If you must know, he's the first boy who's ever asked me out."
Sally and Angua breathed out together. Light dawned. Ah, that was the problem, and this one's a bad case.
"I mean, my hair's all over the place. My legs are too long, and I know my bosom is far too—"
Tawny went on, but Sally had raised a quietening hand.
"First point, Tawny."
"My real name's Betty,"
said Tawny, blowing a nose so exquisite that the greatest sculptor in the world would have wept to carve it. It went blort.
"First point, then, Betty," Sally managed, struggling to use the name, "is that no woman under 45,
50, Angua corrected,
"right, 50, no woman under 50 uses the word bosom to name anything connected to her. You just don't do it."
"I didn't know that,"
Tawny sniffed.
"It's a fact," said Angua. And, oh dear, how to begin to explain the jerk syndrome to someone like Tawny, on whom the name Betty stuck like rocks to a ceiling? This wasn't just a case of the jerk syndrome. This was it, the quintessential, classic, pure, platonic example that should be stuffed and mounted and preserved as a teaching aid for students in the centuries to come. And she was happy with Nobby.
"What I've got to tell you now is," she began, and faded in the face of the task,
"is, look, shall we have another drink? What's the next cocktail on the menu?"
Cheery peered at it.
"Pink, big and wobbly,"
she announced.
"Classy. We'll have four."
Fred Colon peered through the bars. He was, on the whole, a pretty good jailer. He always had a pot of tea on the go. He was, as a general rule, amiably disposed to most people. He was too slow to be easily fooled, and he kept the cell keys in a tin box in the bottom drawer on his desk, a long way out of the reach of any stick, hand, dog, cunningly thrown belt, or trained Clatchian spider monkey, making Fred Colon possibly unique in the annals of jail history. He was a bit worried about this dwarf. You got all sorts in jail, and they often yelled a bit, but with this one he didn't know what was worse, the sobbing or the silence. He'd put a candlestick on a stool by the bars, too, because the dwarf carried on alarmingly if there wasn't enough light. He stirred the tea reflectively and handed the mug to Nobby.
"We've got a rum one here, I reckon," he said. "A dwarf that's scared of the dark? Not right in the head, then. Wouldn't touch his tea and biscuit. What do you think?"
"I think I'll have his biscuit," said Nobby, reaching over to the plate.
"Where are you down here, anyway?" said Fred. "I'm surprised you ain't out there a-ooglin' of young women."
"Tawny's gone out boozing with the girls tonight," said Nobby.
"Ah, you want to warn her about that sort of thing," said Fred Colon. "You know what it's like in the centre when the pubs and clubs empty. There's throwing up and yelling and unladylike behaviour and taking their vests off and I don't know what. It's called," he scratched his head, "minge drinking."
"She's only gone out with Angua and Sally and Cheery, Sarge," said Nobby, taking another biscuit.
You want to watch that, Nobby? We mean ganging up on a man?"
Fred paused.
"A vampire and a werewolf out on the razzle? Take my tip, lad, stay indoors tonight, and if they start behaving in—"
He stopped as the sound of Sam Vimes's voice came down the spiral stone steps, followed closely by its owner.
"So, I've got to stop them forming a block, right?"
"If you're playing the troll side, yes," said a new voice. "A tight group of dwarfs is bad news for trolls."
"Trolls shove, dwarfs throw."
"Right.
And the central rock, no one can jump that, right? Said Vimes.
Yes.
I still think the dwarfs have it all their own way.
We shall see. The important thing...
Vimes stopped when he saw Nobby and Colon.
Okay, lads, I'll talk to the prisoner now, he said. How is he?
Fred indicated the hunched figure on the narrow bunk in the troll. A dwarf had chosen to play as the trolls. Vimes gave the hovering Bashfulson a questioning glance and got another smile in return.
Okay, you got as many of the little sods as possible in a defensive huddle, right?
Vimes's hand hesitated and shifted the dwarf across the board. The click as he placed it was echoed by the one made by the movement of Helmclever's next troll. The dwarf looked sleepy, but his hand had moved with snake speed.
"Who killed the four mining dwarfs, Helmclever?"
said Vimes softly.
"Who killed the boys from the city?"
Dull eyes looked at him, and then, meaningfully, at the board. Vimes moved a dwarf at random.
"The dark soldiers," Helmclever whispered, as a little troll clicked smartly into place.
"Who ordered it?"
Again the look. Again a dwarf placed at random, followed by a troll that was moved so fast that the two pieces seemed to hit the board together.
"Greg Hamcrusher ordered it."
"Why?"
Click, click.
"They'd heard it speaking."
"What was it that spoke? Was it a cube?"
Click, click.
"Yes, it was dug up. It said it spoke with the voice of Barian Bloodaxe."
Vimes heard a gasp from Bashfulson and caught Fred Colon's eye. He jerked his head toward the cell block door and mouthed a couple of words.
"Wasn't he a famous dwarf king?"
said Vimes. Click, click.
"Yes, he commanded the dwarfs at Coombe Valley," said Helmclever.
"And what did this voice say?"
said Vimes. Click, click.
And a third click from behind Vimes as Fred Colon locked the door and stood in front of it, looking impassive.
"I do not know. Arden said it was about the battle. He said it was lies."
"Who killed Greg Hamcrusher?"
Click, click.
"I do not know. Ardent called me to the meeting and said there was terrible fighting among the Grags. Ardent said one of them killed him in the dark, with a mining hammer, but none knew who. They were all struggling together."
All dressed alike, Vimes thought. Just shapes if you can't see their wrists.
"Why did they want to kill him?"
Click, click.
"They had to stop him destroying the words. He was screaming and hitting the cube with the hammer."
"There are sensitive areas on a cube, and it's possible if they're touched in the wrong order. All the sound will vanish,"
whispered Bashfulson.
"I should think the hammer would do the trick whatever it hit,"
said Vimes, turning his head.
"No, Commander. Devices are immensely tough.
They must be."
Vimes turned back to Helmclever.
"It's wrong to destroy lies, but it's okay to kill the miners," he said. "Click."
He heard the hiss of Bashfulson's intake of breath. Well, yes, perhaps that could have been better put. There was no answering move. Helmclever hung his head. "It was wrong to kill the miners," he whispered.
"And why not destroy lies? But it is wrong to think these thoughts, so I said nothing. The old Grags were angry and upset and confused, so Ardent took charge. He said one dwarf killing another underground. Everyone knew that was no business of humans. He said he could make it all right. He said everyone must listen to him. He told the Dark Guards to take the body to the new outer chamber, and he told me to fetch my club."
Vimes glanced at Bashfulson and mouthed the word, "Club?" He got an emphatic nod in return. Helmclever sat, hunched in silence, and then raised one hand slowly and moved a troll. Click. Click, click. Click, click. Click, click. Vimes tried to spare a few brain cells for the game while his mind raced and tried to piece the random information spilling out of Helmclever. "So, it all starts when they come here looking for this magic cube which can speak. Why did they come to the city? How did they know the cube was here?" Click, click. "When I went to begin my training, I took a copy of the Codex. Ardent confiscated it. But then they called me to a meeting and said it was very important, and they would honour me by letting me go with them to the city. Ardent told me it was a great opportunity. Greg Hamcrusher had a mission, he said.
They didn't even know about the painting.
They lived under a mountain. They believed that humans are not real. But Ardent is smart. He said there were always rumours that something had come out of Coombe Valley."
"I bet he's smart," Vimes thought.
"So they come here, do a little light pastoral work and rabble-rousing, and search for the cube in a very dwarfish way.
They find it, but the poor bastards who are doing the digging hear what it's got to say. Well, everyone knows dwarfs gossip, so the Dark Guards make sure these four don't have a chance to. Click, click. Click, click. Then friend Hamcrusher doesn't like what he hears either.
He wants to destroy this thing. In the struggle in the dark, one of the other Grags does the world a favour and fetches him a crack on the noggin. But, whoops, big mistake, because the mob is going to miss him and his jolly urging to wholesale troll slaughter. You know how dwarfs gossip and you can't kill them all. So, while it's still just us all together in the dark, we need a plan. Forward Mr. Ardent, who says, I know. We'll take the corpse out to a tunnel that a troll might just have got into and bash its head in with a club. A troll did it. What right-thinking dwarf could possibly believe anything else?
Click, click.
Why the candles? Said Vimes. The old Grags have been sitting in brilliant candlelight when I saw them.
Click, click.
The Grags ordered it, Helmklever whispered. They feared what might come for them in the darkness.
And what was it that might come? Click.
Helmklever's hand stopped in midair. For several seconds nothing moved in the little circle of yellow light except the candle flames themselves. In the darkness beyond, the shadows craned to hear.
I cannot say, whispered the dwarf.
Click.
Click, click.
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 Vimes glared at the board. Where'd that troll come from? Helmklever had wiped three dwarfs off the board in one go.
Ardent says there's always a troll. A troll got into the mine, said Helmklever. The Grag said yes, that must have been it.
But they knew the truth!
Click, click.
Click.
Click. Three more dwarfs gone, just like that.
Truth is what a Grag says it is, said Helmklever.
The sunlight world is a bad dream anyway. Ardent said no one was to speak about it. He said I was to tell all the guards about the troll.
Blame it on a troll, Vimes thought. For a dwarf, that came naturally. A big troll did it and ran away. This isn't just a can of worms, it's a nest of bloody vipers.
He stared at the board. Bloody hell! I'm running into a wall here. What am I left with?
Brick saw a dwarf hitting another dwarf, but that wasn't the murder. That was Ardent, or someone, giving Hamcrusher's dead body that distinctive bashed-by-a-troll look. I'm not actually certain that's a crime. The murder was done in the dark by one of six dwarfs, and the other five might not even know who did it.
Okay, maybe I can say they conspired to conceal a crime.
Hold on.
But it wasn't Ardent who said the watch should not be told, he said. That was you, wasn't it?
Did you want me to be angry, Mr. Helmklever?
He moved a dwarf.
Click.
Helmklever looked down. Since no answer was forthcoming, Vimes captured the wandering troll and placed it beside the board.
I did not think you would come. Helmklever's voice was barely audible. Hamcrusher was... Ardent said you wouldn't worry because the Grag was such a danger. He said the Grag had ordered the miners to be killed, so now it was ended. But I thought it... It wasn't right. Things were wrong. I heard you were full of pride. I had to get you... interested.
You thought I wouldn't be? A troll is accused of murdering a dwarf at a time like this, and I wouldn't be interested.
Ardent said you would not be because no humans were involved. He said you would not care what happens to dwarfs.
He ought to get out in the fresh air more, said Vimes.
Helmklever's eyes and nose were running now and dripping on the board. A storm stops the battle, Vimes thought. Then the dwarf lifted his head and wailed.
It was the club the troll Mr. Shine gave me for winning 5 games in a row, he wailed. He was my friend. He said I was as good as a troll, so I should have a club. I told Ardent it was a war trophy, but he took it and bashed that poor dead body.
Water dripping on a stone, Vimes thought. And it depends on where the drops fall, right, Mr. Shine? What good has it done this poor devil? He wasn't in the right job to have doubt enter his life.
All right, Mr. Helmklever, thank you for this, he said, sitting back. There is just one thing, though. Do you know who sent those dwarfs to my house?
What dwarfs?
Vimes stared into the weeping red-rimmed eyes. Their owner was either telling the truth or the stage had missed a major talent.
They came to attack me and my family, he said.
I did hear Ardent talking to the captain of the guard, Helmklever murmured. Something about a warning.
A warning? Do you call...
Vimes began, and stopped when he saw Bashfulson shaking his head.
Right, right. No point in taking it out on this one. He's had all the stuffing knocked out of him in any case.
They are very frightened now, Helmklever said.
They don't understand the city. They don't understand why trolls are allowed here. They don't understand people who don't understand them. They fear you.
They fear everything now.
Where have they gone?
I don't know.
"'Ardent said they would have gone now anyway because they've got the cube and the painting,' said Helmclever. "'He said the painting will show where there are more lies and those can be destroyed. "'But they fear most of all the summoning dark, Commander. "'They can feel it coming for them.' "'It's only a drawing,' said Vimes. "'I don't believe in it.'
"'I do,' said Helmclever, calmly. "'It is in this room. How does it come? "'It comes in darkness and in vengeance and in disguise.'
Vimes felt his skin twitch.
Nobby looked around the grimy stone walls. Bashfulson sat bolt upright in his chair. Even Fred Colon shifted uneasily.
"'This is just mystic stuff,' Vimes told himself. "'It's not even human mystic stuff. I don't believe in it.'
"'So why does it feel a bit chilly in here?'
He coughed. "'Well, once it knows they've gone, I expect it'll head out after them.'
"'And it will come for me,' said Helmclever in the same calm voice. He folded his hands in front of him.
"'Why? You didn't kill anybody,' said Vimes.
"'You don't understand. When they killed the miners, one was not all the way dead, and we could hear him hammering on the door with his fists.' And I stood in the tunnel and listened to him die, and I wished him dead so that the noise would stop, but when it did, it went on in my head, and I could have turned the wheel, but I was afraid of the dark guards who have no souls, and because of that the darkness will take mine.
The little voice died away. There was a nervous cough from Nobby.
Well, thank you again, said Vimes.
Good grief. They really messed up his head, poor little sod.
And I've got nothing, he thought. I might get Ardent on a charge of falsifying evidence. I can't put Brick in the witness box because I'll simply be proving there was a troll in the mine. All I've got is young Helmclever here who's barely fit to testify.
He turned to Bashfulson and shrugged.
I think I'd like to keep our friend here tonight for his own good. I can't imagine there's anywhere else for him to go. The statement he made is, of course, covered by...
Now his voice trailed off as his memory nudged him. He turned back in his chair to glare at the sorrowful Helmclever.
"'What painting?' he said.
"'The painting of the Battle of Combe Valley by Methodia Rascal,' said the dwarf, not looking up. "'It's very big. They stole it from the museum.'
"'What?' said Fred Colon, who was making tea in the corner. "'It was them.'
"'What? You know about this, Fred?' Vimes demanded.
"'Yes, Mr. Vimes, we did a report.'
"'Combe Valley! Combe Valley! Combe Valley!' roared Vimes, slapping his hand down on the table so hard that the candlesticks jumped into the air. "'A report? What the hell good's a report? Have I got time these days to read reports? Why doesn't someone tell me these things?'
One candlestick rolled onto the floor and went out. Vimes grabbed for the other as it reached the edge of the table, but it spun away from his fingers and landed wick first on the flagstones. Darkness fell like an axe. Helmclever groaned. It was a heartfelt, soul-creaking groan like the death rattle from a living mouth.
"'Nobby!' screamed Vimes. "'Light a goddamn match right now, and that's a goddamn order!'
There was a frantic scrabbling in the dark, and then a match head was a sudden supernova.
"'Well, bring it here, man!' he shouted to Nobby. "'Get those candles lit!'
Helmclever was still staring at the table where the ill-tempered thump had scattered the remains of the game. Vimes glanced down at the game board as the candle flames grew.
"'If you were the kind to see things, you'd say that the trolls and dwarfs had fallen in a rough circle around the central rock.' While a few more dwarfs had rolled away in a line. You'd say, in fact, that from above they formed the shape of a round eye with a tail.
Helmclever gave a little sigh and slipped sideways onto the floor. Vimes stood up to help him, and then remembered just in time about politics. He forced himself to back away, hands in the air.
"'Mr. Bashelson,' he said, "'I can't touch him, please.'
The grag nodded and knelt down by the dwarf.
"'No pulse, no heartbeat,' he announced.
"'I'm sorry, Commander.'
"'Then it looks as though I'm now in your hands,' said Vimes.
"'Indeed, in the hands of a dwarf,' said the Grag, standing up. "'Commander Vimes, I will swear that Helmclever was treated with nothing but concern and courtesy while I was here, and perhaps with more kindness from you than a dwarf might have right to expect. His death is not on your hands. The summoning dark called him. Dwarfs will understand.'
"'Well, I don't.
Why'd it kill him?' What did the poor bugger do?
I think it's more true to say that the fear of the summoning dark killed him, said the Grag. He left a miner trapped, heard his cries in the dark and did nothing. To all dwarfs that is a terrible crime.
As bad as wiping away a word, said Vimes sourly.
He felt more shaken up than he'd care to admit. He shouldn't have slapped the table like that, but he'd been so angry, and now his hand hurt more than ever.
Some would say it is far worse. His own guilt and fear killed Helmcliver. It's as if he had his own summoning dark in his head, said Bashelson. In a way, perhaps, we all have, Commander, or something similar.
You know, your religion really messes people up, said Vimes.
Not in comparison to what they do to one another, said Bashelson, calmly folding the dead dwarf's hands across his chest.
And it is not a religion, Commander. Tak wrote the world and the laws, and then he left us. He does not require that we think of him, only that we think.
He stood up. I shall explain the situation to my fellows, Commander. Incidentally, I would ask you to take me with you to Coombe Valley.
Did I say I was going to Coombe Valley? Said Vimes.
All right, said the Grag calmly. Let's say, then, that should the mood take you to go to Coombe Valley, you will take me. I know the place, I know the history. I even know quite a lot about Mind Sign, especially the major darknesses. I may be useful.
You demand all that just for telling the truth, said Vimes.
As a matter of fact, no.
Juds, has factus.
A bargain with no axe in my hand. I will tell the truth whatever you decide, said Bashfulson. However, since you are not going to Coombe Valley, Commander, I will not press you. It was only an idle thought.
Fun. What is it good for? It's not pleasure, joy, delight, enjoyment, or glee. It's a hollow, cruel, vicious little bastard. A word for something sought with a hilarious couple of wobbly antennae on your head and the words, I want it, on your shirt, and it tends to leave you waking up with your face stuck to the street. Somehow, Angua had acquired a magenta feather boa. It wasn't her. It wasn't anyone. It had just turned up. The sheer fakery of it made her more gloomy. Something was nagging at the back of her mind, and it annoyed her that she didn't know what it was. They had ended up in beers, as she knew they would. It was the undead bar, although it tolerated anyone who wasn't too normal. It certainly tolerated Tawnee. She just didn't get it, did she? The reason why men never talked to her? The trouble was, thought Angua, that Nobby wasn't actually a bad person, as such. As far as she knew, he'd always been faithful to Miss Pushpram, which was to say that when it came to being hit with a fish and then pelted with clams, he never thought of any other girl but her. He actually had quite a romantic soul, but it was encased in what could only be called Nobby Nobs. Sally had accompanied Tawnee to the ladies, which was always wise in beers. Now Angua was staring at yet another cocktail menu, painted on a board above the bar in a very shaky script by Igor, who wasn't an Igor, but was merely called one. It was best not to have fun with him on this subject, and especially not to ask him to sew your head back on. He'd done his best to flow with the zeitgeist, or would have done if he'd known what the word meant, but had totally failed to grasp the subtleties of the modern cocktail bar, so that the drinks on offer included having you teeth smashed in by a big stinky fist, head nailed to the door, kick in a fork, like big lump of steel hammer through you ears, neck bolt. Actually, the neck bolt wasn't too bad, Angua had to admit.
"Excuse me," said Cheery, teetering on a bar stool. "Well, what was all that about Tawnee? I could see you and Sally nodding to each other."
"That? Oh, it's the jerk syndrome," Angua remembered who she was talking to, and added, "Dwarfs probably don't have that. It means sometimes a woman is so beautiful that any man with half a brain isn't going to think of asking her out, okay? Because it's obvious that she's far too grand for the likes of him. Are you with me?"
"I think so."
"Well, that's Tawnee. And for the purposes of this explanation, Nobby has not got half a brain. He's so used to women saying no when he asks them out that he's not afraid of being blown off. So he asks her because he figures why not, and she, who by now thinks there's something wrong with her, is so grateful she says okay."
"But she likes him."
"I know. That's where it all gets strange."
"It's much simpler for dwarfs," said Cheery.
"I expect it is."
"But probably not as much fun,"
said Cheery, looking crestfallen. Tawnee was returning. Angua ordered 3 neck bolts, while Cheery hopefully negotiated for a screaming orgasm. Patience is a key virtue among dwarfs. And then, with occasional assistance from Sally, Angua explained to Tawnee the facts of, well, everything. It took some while. You had to keep changing the shape of sentences to get them fit into the currently available space in Tawny's brain. Angua clung to the idea, though, that the girl couldn't be that stupid. She works in a strip club, didn't she? I mean, why do you think men pay to watch you on stage? She asked.
Because I'm very good, said Tawny promptly. When I was 10, I got the Dancer of the Year award in Miss Deviante's ballet and tap class.
Tap dancing, said Sally, grinning. Hey, why don't you try that on stage?
Angua closed her mind to the image of Tawny tap dancing. The club would probably burn to the ground.
Let me try this another way, she said. And I'm telling you this as another female.
Tawny listened intently, and even the way in which she looked puzzled was unfair to the rest of her sex. When Angua had finished, she looked hopefully at the angelic expression.
So, what you're saying, right, said Tawny, is that walking out with Nobby is like going into a big posh restaurant and only eating the bread roll?
Exactly, said Angua. You've got it.
But I never really meet men. Granny told me not to act like a floozy.
And you don't think that working at... Angua began, but Sally cut in.
Sometimes you need to floose regularly, she said. Haven't you ever just gone into a bar and had a drink with a man?
No.
Right, said Sally. She drained her glass. I don't like these neck bolts. Let's go somewhere else and...
She paused.
Open your mind to possibilities.
It was odd, having Sybil in Pseudopolis Yard. It had been one of the Ramkin family homes before she'd given it to the watch. She'd been a girl there. It had been her home. Some apprehension of this crept into the chipped and stained souls of the watchmen. Men, not known for the elegance of their manners, found themselves automatically wiping their feet as they came in and respectfully removing their helmets. They spoke differently, too, slowly and hesitantly, anxiously scanning the sentence ahead for expletives to delete. Someone even found a broom and swept up, or at least moved the dirt to a less obvious place. Upstairs, in what had been up until then the cash office, young Sam slept peacefully in a makeshift bed. One day, Vimes hoped, he'd be able to tell him that on one special night he'd been guarded by 4 troll watchmen. They'd been off duty but volunteered to come in for this, and were just itching for some dwarfs to try anything. Sam hoped the boy would be impressed. The most other kids could hope for was angels. Vimes had commandeered the canteen because it had a big enough table. He'd spread out a map of the city. A lot of the rest of the planking was occupied by pages from the Coombe Valley Codex. This wasn't a game, this was a puzzle. A sort of, yes, jigsaw puzzle. And he ought to be able to do it, he reasoned, because he already had nearly all the corners. Ettercap Street, Money Trap.